You want to ask a question?
Awaken ready.
Yay! I was hoping somebody would do that to wake all the rest of us up. Why don't we start with a prayer? Heavenly Father, Paramahansa Yogananda, saints of all religions, our friend and teacher, Swami Kriyananda, we humbly bow before all of you. Divine Mother, be with us this evening. Open our hearts. Allow energy to flow upward. Bathe with devotion for you. Neutralizing all of our likes and dislikes. And helping us to feel your presence in everyone, in everything, behind every action. Om. Peace. Amen. Okay. Glasses on. Everybody feels far away. I guess this is what happens when it's a bigger group, huh? Okay, so I'm not going to start all the way back down at Earth again. We don't need to do that. But I do want to mention, because it's important, and Bhajana kept mentioning it last week, and it was very meaningful, and it's the essence of all that we're going to talk about, certainly from the beginning, but in a particular way, moving forward now. She kept using the word enthusiasm, and she kept saying it, we need enthusiasm, and it's a big word. We could use the word power, we could use the word energy. Really, what she was pointing out to us is that we have to gather all of that strength that's coming up from the first chakra through the second chakra, and really through this third chakra, to be able to move on spiritually, really, at all. That's the point. Last week was a breaking point. Arjuna throws down his bow and arrow, says, I won't fight. Krishna says, yes, you will. For the sake of everyone, for the sake of everything, remember, everyone resides within us. It's not really this army of people that's outside of us. Nor is it really Arjuna who represents all of us. That whole army lives within us. That is the energy in our chakras, that they are the vrittis that we are trying to neutralize. And Patanjali, who's the great teacher of yoga, which means that place where we realize that we are one with everything, we realize it. We don't have to think about it. We don't have to learn it. Where we actually feel it right at our core. Patanjali says, yoga is the neutralization of all of this energy. It's that place where we lose, we'll talk tonight about our likes or dislikes, where we don't have to worry about which way the fire is going. We're not being tyrants out in the world. We're not being dictators. We're not being controlling. We're not losing, based on the second chakra, our fluidity, just flowing everywhere, not knowing where or in what way to direct our loyalty, our focus, our creativity, where to direct our intuition. Bhajan has said many times last week, I've said it too, but she was the last one who spoke, always bringing our attention to the point between the eyebrows. That's the direction for everything. That's what neutralization of the vrittis really means. It means just drawing all of the energy in and allowing it to flow upward. But it's not just allowing it. It's saying we need enthusiasm. We need to bring all of that power, all of that fire that is that third chakra. Swamiji says in one of his talks, really to attain freedom. Freedom in this case, remember we're talking about being spiritually free, which means always remembering, knowing remembering in the Sanskrit way, right? Smriti, where we know from the inside out who we really are. It's not a function of the mind anymore. That's why the English language gets a little tricky, because it makes us think we're supposed to sit and remember the way we remember things in classes. No, you remember because it's like, what do we call it in English? We call it an aha moment. That aha, now I get it. That's what this is. That really is what smriti means. But he says, to attain freedom, you can't just be avoidant. You don't just avoid the power, the things you're afraid of. It's not avoidance and it's not fear. That you need courage, enthusiasm, power. You need a sense of victory to be able to feel free. Now again, I'm backing up a little bit. We're talking about the third chakra, which is fire. So everything comes into that third chakra, and we subject it to this fire, and it's transformed. It's purified and transformed. So whatever we offer in, you know, we have a wonderful purification ceremony here on Sundays, many of you know. But actually, as I look around, many of you don't know. So where for 45 minutes before our Sunday service, you come up and symbolically, you write on a piece of paper some quality that you would like to either offer back to the divine, because after all, God is everything. He's not just the love we feel, the joy we feel, the compassion. He's the angst that we feel when somebody gets in our way of accomplishing something, when our boss isn't treating us a certain way. It's the greediness that we feel, the jealousy that we can feel. So we write on a piece of paper either something we want to say, you know what, God, this was yours to begin with. Here, I'm going to offer it back to you. I often write on there, all traces of ego. That's a big demand, prayer. Just take my ego. But I write it there. But I could write a lot of different things. Or you could say, help me to love more. Help me to be more compassionate. Help me to enhance a quality that I'd like to enhance. Help me to see you in everyone, behind every thought, behind every action. Even when I'm wondering, really? This too is God? Everything's God. And you bring it up in front of a light bearer. And you say these words when you come up to our altar on Sunday morning. I seek purification by the grace of God. It's so beautiful to offer that humility. It's not demeaning ourselves. It's not surrendering any part of ourselves. It's saying, I seek purification. I want that energy to flow through my third chakra intact. I want all of that energy by the grace of God. And then we do this little ceremony. We pray, we as light bearers, just acting as channels for these great masters. We meditate with you. We bless you at the heart chakra, which I'll talk about in a minute. And at the very end of it, we say to who's ever in front of us, by the grace of our masters, you are free. And then you take that piece of paper and you bring it up to the altar and you offer it to these great masters. And then we used to burn them. We don't anymore because people have had a lot of trouble with the fire. Excuse me. In terms of allergies, sensitivities. So somebody takes that bowl outside afterwards and we set it on fire because it symbolizes exactly this, all of this energy swirling through these vrittis and neutralizing them. And remember, we talked about all of that energy coming in. In our case, it's coming up, in and up. And just grabbing all those little, not really knowing what we're loyal to, maybe being a little too fluid and getting lost, maybe not having the groundedness, the determination, and we're just offering it all up. That's what all of this is about. But we cannot move on from here because the fourth chakra is really, you know, we talk about the lower three chakras and the upper three chakras. And Bhajana has been telling us all of the chakras, those lower three chakras, they're related to one chakra in particular as the upper three. It's not that the lower three are bad, quite the contrary. We need them. We need to work with them. But now we come to the heart chakra. Now we really, in earnest, enter into a spiritual reality. And again, I don't want to say as if we haven't been. Of course we have been. But now we enter into the heart, which is represented by the element air, which really is way more formless than anywhere that we've been until now. It's not earth. It's not water. It's not even fire. It's not in the physical world in the same way that these other elements have been. So something very expansive happens here. Air, if you just let it go, you know, you can compress air. You can put, I don't know, I should have looked this up actually, but I didn't know I was going to say it. How many cubic feet of air with a lot of pressure into some small cylinder? But what happens the minute you let it go? That same air not only goes out and fills up a space much bigger than that, but it becomes, it engages itself. It almost becomes lost in all of what's around it. Not lost, but unified with. So it goes, can very easily go from being separate in that cylinder to being unified. So it has a lot less definition. And when we think, remember we've talked a lot about self-definition in many courses here. So it loses its individuality and it really moves in a very big way towards universality. There's a big shift that happens here at the heart if we use that energy that's been coming up our spine in the right way. And I can use that word here. Because the heart and what's going on in the heart is very, very subtle. This is one of the harder chakras to talk about so far. Because what happens, you know, this difference in the heart chakra where likes and dislikes reside. That's a huge topic to try and talk about. Our likes and dislikes and all of our choices that we make in the world, in all of our lives, based on that. I like this, I don't like that. I want this, I don't want that. This person's treating me well, this person is not treating me well. This is the better, worse, either or, and it's huge here. And what happens? We fool ourselves. And it's subtle because it's air. It's a different quality here. So it's very easy to fool ourselves, to say, you know, I meditated on this morning, and I'm certain God wants me to be with this partner. I'm certain. Everything feels absolutely right. And when our heart is wanting that and craving that, we are very good at telling ourselves that's the truth. And we do it in the name of God. You know, look at all of what's going on in the world these days in the name of God. Really. And do you think for a minute that these terrorists are not as committed in the name of God to what they're doing as we are to what we call peace and calmness? I don't know how many of you have seen the movie or the play or read the book Les Miserables, but it's rather an extraordinary story. How many of you have ever know the story at all? Can I just see a show of hands? Okay. I don't have time, nor would it be terribly worthwhile to tell it. But, you know, it's a classic. And here's the part of the story that's really important. I've seen this play probably 6 times on Broadway and other places. It's very touching and very powerful. But the story is, it takes place right at the outbreak, just before and then during the French Revolution. And there's a man who, because his family was starving, stole some bread. And he stole bread and he fed his family. Then there's part of the gendarme, the French police, and there's a man particularly, whose name I'm blocking, Javert, thank you, who decides that at all costs he's got to catch this man and he's got to put him in jail because he behaved wrongly. He stole. And a big thrust of what's going on in this play is that Javert is after Jean Valjean, thank you. I don't know how I could forget that, but I love their names. Jean Valjean's a beautiful man who's serving a lot of people in the world, not just feeding his family, but it's a complicated story, but has committed himself to taking care of another, a woman's child who he met, because years ago in his factory, unbeknownst to him, some of the rules that he created had her lose her job. That's not as meaningful, except to say that he turns his whole life around to take care of her daughter as she dies at a young age. So he feels not only for himself, but now he has this young girl who he's committed to taking care of. But Javert is absolutely as committed to finding him and to getting him put back in jail for the rest of his life because he committed this wrong of stealing bread. And when you meet these characters, you realize when Jean Valjean has an opportunity to kill Javert later, and he doesn't, but he wants to let him go free, Javert is so committed to his belief that what he's doing is right that he commits suicide in that moment instead. It's so powerful when you get inside of the workings of people who are committed to something based on what they believe is right in their heart. Am I telling enough of the story to get it? It's just like when we look at these terrorists, these people who will blow themselves up and a lot of other people and children. I mean, they'll send children out to do it. They're not doing it just to be horrible. They actually believe that God wants this of them. That's an extreme story, but believe me, we all get caught up in the feelings in our hearts in these ways. Asha says very cutely in many of her talks, when she talks about looking back at things that we've done in the past in our lives, she said, you know, it seemed like a good idea at the time. And it's very powerful. Of course it did. We wouldn't have done it otherwise. It's very subtle here. Everything about the heart chakra is very subtle. At its best, it's all of these things. It's about our own expansiveness, spiritually speaking. It's about less self-definition, less individual, more universal, more a part of all that is, less boundary. We start losing that clarity about who we're sure we think we are. Nothing that the mind can do for us. Nothing. You have to do this through meditation, through other spiritual practices of drawing energy in and just letting it flow up through the heart till you begin to have an experience of being bigger than you are. I had a woman who I saw today as part of my medical practice, and she told me about an experience she had as a little girl that put her right on her path. She's actually not on this path, but she said, I sat down for the first time to meditate, and she was telling me she was near some sea. I don't remember right now which sea it was. It doesn't matter. Obviously in an expansive environment. And she had a profound experience. She said, as I was coming out of the meditation, and she was little, she was just a little girl, she said, I couldn't remember where I ended and where the sea began. And she said, as I came out of the meditation, it scared her. Of course it would, you know, when you get back into yourself and you don't know what's sea and what's you. But it was so beautiful while she was in it. You can't sit down near the sea and say, okay, I'm going to be one with the sea. But if you go into a deep enough meditation, you begin to feel, wow, I could never have taught myself this, but I am a part of all that is, and I'm losing my boundaries about that. That's what happens at this chakra. You develop much more humility. Of course you would be more humble when you realize that you're a part of everything around you and you lose a sense of self. More openness. And here's the most important part of the heart chakra. And that is, and we have to practice this at a human level, what I'm about to say. So it's interesting how we use each incarnation. So we have to practice love at a human level. I've often said people who become parents get to do this probably in the deepest, most meaningful way if they know what they're doing, because the truth is, at a human level, it is the easiest to love your children. And it's the easiest to love your children the younger they are. As they get older and they start to develop their, you see their own karma, you see their own likes and dislikes. Everybody who's a parent in this room knows that this is true. It's hard. Of course, you love them just as much when they're 15 and 16, but it's challenging. And there can be times where you are really challenged to keep your heart open to this now other separate individual. But when they're babies, even when they're toddlers, even when they're toddlers and they're throwing their temper tantrums, we don't really take it seriously. But the first time they look at us and say, I don't like you, or worse, they say, I hate you, or you're ruining my life because you want them in by midnight or whatever it is, it just challenges us. They become their own beings. But the truth is, when they're young, or those moments when we first fall in love, and we all know what that's like, and your heart is just so wide open, those are the ways that we practice. Now, we practice with all human love, and I'm playing with it a little bit, not by much. But the truth is, in relationships, and a lot of people feel this, you first fall in love, and it's such a beautiful love. Then you go through all those years in the middle of trying to make the marriage work or the relationship work. It's hard work. Anybody who's been in a relationship for more than 2 years will tell you that. It gets to be hard work. Then you get to the other side, and I think particularly for those of us who have been on a spiritual path, and the love becomes less personal. It just does. We are less committed to our ways, our needs. It's my way or the highway, right? We move through that, and that love can really grow on the other side because we've been practicing. And of course, along the way, not every relationship makes it. I'm not convinced that every relationship is supposed to make it or meant to make it. You know, this is where karma comes in. But when we're talking about, now we're talking about expansive love, spiritual love, the love that's going to take us, continuing on our soul's journey up through these chakras. We get to practice at the human level, practice loving, practice opening our heart, practice generosity, and then we get to practice seeing the divine in everyone. And I mean, literally, we can practice. So many of you have heard some of the stories that I've gone through in my own relationship, which I so freely share here. Anyway, I freely share it, and I just hope that it's seen in the right light if it's ever seen from home. But I had an experience once, a divine, many of you know I call it a spiritual epiphany, where I was told that every single time moving forward that I look at my husband, those of you who are in relationship, just imagine this really, that I would not see him, but that I would see God looking back out at me. That I would always see Divine Mother through his eyes, and that I would never see anything wrong with him again. That's a challenge. That was a big order that night as God talked to me, really, probably now at least 15 years ago. I mean, huge. And then every time I wanted to become critical of the person, to say to myself, remember, this is not what it appears to be. This is God talking to you. Listen, what is God trying to tell you right now? I told you last week, I think it was in here, where I told you that he often would say to me, you're being mean. And I just couldn't imagine that I was mean. I just could not imagine that I was a mean person ever. You know, until one day it dawned on me in the midst of one of those, wow, listen to yourself. That's mean. It was mean. And it was meant, albeit unconsciously in the moment, to hurt or to stop. Get out of my way. I don't want you here, so I'm going to say something mean and see if you'll go away. No, Shanti, remember, this is Divine Mother. Do you want to speak that way? You know, it's very interesting. I was leading a group one night. I was leading a group, but I was absent one night, and I heard about the group that somebody used some language that we just typically wouldn't use in this temple. I mean, most of us, it always amazes me that people swear. I have to tell you, not because I never swore, but because it's been so many years that I just can't imagine. I mean, it's not that I can't even imagine saying the words. It's those words would never come into my consciousness anymore. Now watch, something's going to happen to me tomorrow that's going to make me reach for one of those words. I just know it. But let me say that 99.9% of the time, it would never dawn on me. And I also find it kind of a cheap shot at the English language, and it lowers everybody's energy. And I just say to people, it's not good for you to say those words. It's not good for you to have the thoughts that would have you say the words, but it's not. But anyway, I heard at this meeting that was sort of, I was overseeing, but not there, that somebody had really used some nice expletives about another person in our community. And I called that person and asked them to come and speak with me about that, privately, of course, not in the group. And I said, did this happen? Yes, it happened. And that. And I said, really, what were you thinking? Well, it was justified and it helped me. So finally, I said to her, let me ask you, if Swamiji had been in the room, would you have said that? And she said to me, of course not. I said, if I had been in the room, would you have said it? She thought. She said, no, probably not. I said, then why would you ever say it? Why would it ever come to you? Do you know what allows us? If we think we're seeing God in everyone, if Swami Kriyananda were in this room or Master was in this room, how would we behave? Because the truth is, they are through every one of us. They're right here. And whatever our likes or dislikes are, and whatever way we've decided that we can give ourselves permission to see it differently, that's really all it is. If we actually want to take this journey up the spine, then we have to start saying to ourselves over and over and over, oh, here's Divine Mother in this form. Here's Divine Mother in that form. And I really mean it. And it's not easy, but that doesn't make it any less the truth. A couple of days ago, somebody wanted to come and talk to me about something that I knew was going to be challenging. I knew it for a lot of reasons. I knew the person was aggravated. I knew the subject was going to be aggravating and difficult to me, maybe not aggravating, but trying to find Dharma in the midst of it was going to stretch me. So I said to myself about 45 minutes before that meeting, now would be a very good time to go over to the temple and meditate. I could have just as easily, which 2 years ago I might have done, gotten engaged in the battle in my office and started explaining everything in different light to this person. But I said to myself, really, what is going to allow you to go into this meeting with your heart as wide open as it can be? And it was just a blessing that that came to me. That was the gift 15 years ago. No, you will not fight with your husband. You will always see God. That is your practice. Now, just so I'm saying it in front of you and the whole rest of the world, do I always see God? I wish I could say I did. I don't. But it's always right there. Oops, you didn't do it right this time. Shanti, you weren't on. It doesn't matter how justified I feel in the argument or in these meetings, behaving other than heart wide open, looking at Divine Mother all the time. That's what the heart chakra is. It's transcending our likes, our dislikes, our opinions, our judgments. And you can all imagine, as I'm speaking, how self-righteous we could get about this. Because let's face it, there are a lot of difficult people in the world. And you know, you could walk away and say, of course I got irritated. Of course I, whatever. But really, it has nothing to do with the other person. Nothing to do with the other person. It has only to do with where we are all the time. I tell you these stories because they're, what's the word I want? Sorry, I can't think of the word, but they demonstrate the point perfectly. Who is it who always comes up with my answers here? Kamal always comes up with my answers. I'm not going to put you on the spot. I thought you would have the word right there for me. Somebody came to see me and they were telling me a little bit about some difficulty they were having with their parent. And this is a grown woman, so the parent's older. And in the course of telling me this story, this man who is, you know, it's one of those things where the parent had really been difficult all of his life. I mean, I heard the stories, the parent was difficult. And I think maybe even deeply disturbed, actually. And now he has children and the children are grown. And he was saying to me, the kids don't want to be around my parent. And then told me a story about how awful the parent was, so how he had to intervene when they were together, and how now the son's saying, I don't want to go there anymore. And I said to this person, I said, you know, you're telling me this story to tell me how difficult your parent is and how justified you are in the way you intervened, when you intervened, because you were doing it in the name of protecting your child. The child's grown up too, by the way. And I said, but you know, if you had turned to that child and said, your grandfather really loves you and he's doing the best he can, you don't really ever need to be near him, but he's really trying to be loving and whatever. I said, he probably wouldn't have the same feeling. And so I'm sharing this story to say, yes, the parent's difficult, but where do we enter in? What if we had been able to treat that parent right then as if it were a manifestation of divine energy? What if we had been able to do that? The story would look very different. And I wasn't even saying to this person, you should, because actually I'm not sure that the person shouldn't divorce his parents. There are times where that has to happen. And I don't know how the story is going to turn out yet. But I am saying that if we're always willing to look inside and ask ourselves, what if, even if we need to leave a relationship, what if we do that with our heart wide open and with great love? How does the story go differently then? How does the story in our spine go differently and in that other person's spine go differently? Because as long as we hold on to the same usual, traditional ways of dealing, this person's mean to me, I have a right to have this feeling. What does that even mean? I have a right to. That's not what we're doing as yogis. We're saying to ourselves, what can we do in every situation that's going to help us raise our own energy? Does that usually mean that people around us calm down, change, feel better, feel safer to become more of who they are? It does. I can tell you, often. If the person's actually got some psychotic disorder, does that happen? No. But do we still walk away feeling closer to God, closer to our true nature? Whenever we can, we have to be honest with ourselves. Each one of us can only take our next step. Everything that we do that leaves us on the left side of each of these columns, expansive, humble, open, loving, devotion rather than emotion. Anytime that we start getting very emotional about something, even as yesterday I was feeling like, oh man, I got to go into this meeting. Now would be a good time to go meditate, Shanti. Right now, because you have that deep negative feeling about it. If we could try always to stop ourselves and turn ourselves inward and upward, even if we have to go through the difficult situation, we walk away feeling better. Does that make sense to everybody? Because we're really much more in touch with who we really are. And it always feels better to treat ourselves well and to treat other people well. Always, no matter how horrible they're being. Does anybody have any... I'm going to just stop and collect myself here for a minute. So does anybody have any comments or questions, stories, anything you'd like to share? Krista. Just 1 minute. Could you... Gopal's going to bring you. It's recorded. Watch what you say. We can always edit it out, though. No, I really mean that. Many of us aren't used to being recorded, and, you know, it serves us to be mindful.
I have a challenging father, and lately I've decided that I want to change the way I think about him and the way I relate to him. Mm-hmm. And so the way I've been praying for him is for peace and happiness and free from suffering. Mm. And he's a hoarder. And I'm trying to help him get through whatever that is in the way I can, living remotely. And my relationship with him since praying for him is totally different. And he seems happier. And I don't even think it's about me, but having that desire for someone's happiness and someone's freedom from suffering has really just kind of shifted things in my world and the way I relate. And it's been really amazing.
Thank you for sharing that. That is so such a beautiful story and such an important story. When you say, I don't even think it's about me, it's not about you, Krista. And good for you for knowing that. But because then we get on the other side of, look at what I did, look at how great I am. That doesn't work. But it is about all of what you've done until this moment. By the way, I just have to say, is it any accident that you walked in here for the first time tonight? It's sort of interesting hearing that story. I mean, here we are talking about the heart. But that you could know enough to open your heart and decide to start praying for him, which really means allowing divine energy to flow through you to him, is healing in ways that we cannot imagine. And Master and Swamiji say it over and over, that when we feel angry with somebody or somebody's behaving in bad ways, as soon as we start praying for them, you know why? Because you cannot hold on to anger and love at the same time. They are mutually exclusive. And when you swallow whatever pride, whatever, this is my father, how could he have treated me this way, or whatever any of the stories are, and you start loving that person, you are completely changing the energetic dynamic in which you both live and relate. I don't even mean that you live together, but I mean everything changes. The minute you start saying, this is why this peace and harmony prayer, you said peace and happiness, which you may be praying for, which is perfect. But we've all been doing this peace and harmony prayer, Ananda worldwide. It will change the world. There is no doubt about it. It has to. Everything's energy. Everything can be transformed. Everything gets affected. Every time we say, Lord, grant my father peace and happiness, just to be respectful of what you're saying, it changes everything. It changes everything. So that's a beautiful story. Yeah. Hold on for the microphone.
Earlier, you spoke of...
Could I ask you to hold on your question for 1 minute? Because I want to say something that I just glanced down and I saw. I used to say that I never, ever gave a sermon, a talk, or a class, and I think this was probably true for about 10 years, without saying, that quoting Master, when he said, a room can be in darkness for thousands of years, but the instant you turn on a light, the darkness disappears. He said that. He went on to expound on it. I mean, he basically said you can't reason with the darkness, you can't argue with the darkness, you can't beat it up, you can't make it go away in any way other than turning on a light. And when you think of it, because it's so hard for our minds to grasp energy and what I was just saying to you, you changed everything from the instant you started that. You turned on the light. And once the light's on, there just simply is no darkness. We can't make it dark in this room, no matter what we do. And that is a beautiful analogy for life. I just looked down and saw something that related to that. And I wanted to say, that's what Master meant. And if we can remember that, what can I do to turn on a light? What does that look like in this situation at this moment? Which is exactly what you did. I'm sorry, Robert, go ahead.
Dissipates or just can't coexist. But anyway, earlier you were talking about offering, making an offering to God, say, and writing something down. This includes inner negativities or problems?
Includes everything.
I don't understand how you, if you had something horrible, and you wrote it, and you wanted to offer it, I guess, to purge it in the hearts of the fire, but...
You see, it's not just like you say, I just need to be rid of this here, I'm going to put it over here. The very intention, the very thought that you sit, that you walk up here on a Sunday morning, it is so beautiful, and you kneel, and you say, I seek purification by the grace of God. There is nothing. God does not see you as being awful. You are not seen that way. And I can say to you, not just in God's eyes, but in devotees who have been on this path, for any period of time, people come to me all the time, and it sometimes takes them years to tell me their secrets. Years. And then when they tell me, I think that's what they've been afraid, that's what they've been holding as awful. Almost nobody ever sees us as looking as awful or as we feel about ourselves. And even if we've done the most despicable things that we can imagine, what would that be? Murder? Raping a child? I mean, stealing our grandmother's, you know, $500,000 worth of jewelry and selling it for cocaine? I've met a lot of people who do these things. You know, the minute you decide with any sincerity, and sometimes we can't stick to it. Sometimes it's just the moment that we're there, and we are not just saying, take this from me, but I'm not, okay, if you really mean it, if you really mean it, then just take it away. No. But when we sit down and our intention, this is why Master says God watches the heart. And it's not like there's another being out there watching our heart. But when our heart opens in the right direction, in an instant, all of that is gone. God knows who we are. God absolutely knows who we are. I one time wrote to a friend who was suffering with something that he hadn't been good enough in a certain situation, and it lasted over years. I haven't been good enough. And you know, and he was suffering about his relationship with his spiritual teacher. And I said, you know, you gave him everything you had. You didn't give what you didn't have, but neither did he expect that. He knew who you were. I mean, it's so clear. We, in our separateness and from our minds, are so judgmental of ourselves. I hope I'm even answering your question. Am I? You know, how many people in this room, I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand, When you look in the mirror, do you look in the mirror and say, wow, that is my best quality? You look in the mirror, you immediately see what's wrong. You see exactly what's wrong, and you see it as being more wrong than it really is. Nobody else would ever see it as being as wrong as you do. I lived for years thinking that I was ugly because of this. You see this? I wear a size 6 or 8. Really, I suffered over this for decades. I called myself fat. It was real to me. But that's not the only thing. I'm not going to tell you too many of my... You look in the mirror, you see what's wrong. You know, we all do it. And we're just looking in a big mirror here. You know, there's nothing wrong. There's absolutely nothing wrong. The instant you turn on a light, the darkness disappears. I didn't make that up. This avatar said that to us. We have to all let that in. How can I turn on a light? What does that mean in our lives? It doesn't always mean saying the peace and harmony prayer for your father. Maybe you have the best father in the world, but believe me, it means something. And we have to remember, you know, there was a friend of mine who, she's been very heavy all of her life. I've probably watched her lose, no kidding, about 300 pounds. She loses it, but I'm not exaggerating. She has probably lost, in the years I've known her, 300 pounds. One time I found this little magnet that I put on her refrigerator. And it said, because I used to say to her, quit losing weight. Just stay fat. You're beautiful. You're lovely. Just let it come out. Just be one of those big fat people who just hugs people. Everybody wants to fall into your arms. You're gorgeous. You're a lover. It's who you are. I found this magnet. It said, may you always feel as beautiful as you were in the eyes of God when he first thought of you. Isn't that beautiful? May you always feel as beautiful as you were in the eyes of God when he first thought of you. She still has it on her refrigerator. She's still trying to lose weight, unfortunately. But I just said that. I mean, I did. I just said to her, she said, you're always helping everybody else lose weight. I said, you should not lose weight. You should never lose another pound. It's not worth it. You're missing all these years of being beautiful, exactly as you are. We are so hard on ourselves. We are so stuck. It's right. My goodness, did I not write likes and dislikes on this board? It's the main point here. Yeah, likes and dislikes. Really, I mean it. We are so stuck there. It's almost all of what it means. It's not just about ourselves. We have likes and dislikes about everybody and everything. We really do. And you know, Swami says it over and over. Could you ever imagine spending your life trying to fix every dislike that you have? It's impossible. We've said it every week. You have to turn on the light. That's just exactly what you have to do. Anybody else have any other questions or comments? Let me just see if I have anything else that I wanted to. Oh, this is one other important point that I'm going to make, and then we'll stop for dinner. And that is, we have to be very mindful and gentle with ourselves and honest and loving. Sometimes when I see mothers particularly, they come in and they're just treating themselves badly in some way. You know, maybe they can't quit eating everything in the world, and or they never exercise, and they, everybody loves to tell me how they have no time to do whatever they don't want to do, or whatever it is, it doesn't matter. And I'll say to them, if I told you right now that your child's life depended on getting out there and exercising for 30 minutes four times a week, if I said to you, your child will die if you don't make that happen, what would you do? They say, oh my God, I'd get out there and exercise four times a week. I say, can you treat yourself as with that much love as you treat your child? We have to be loving with ourselves. So we can't, because all of this could be so easily mistaken. Oh, I'm just going to become no feelings. I'm going to become dispassionate about everything. And we get cold. We get shut down. We actually create more of a block in the chakra than we had before. So I just want to say, this is why we practice with human love. This is why we practice loving. This is why we do the peace and harmony prayer. This is why we do so many things. We're transforming energy. We're not stifling it. Anywhere up this whole column here, anywhere up this astral spine, we can't stifle things. We have to be honest. It's going to play itself out anyway. Doesn't matter how many lies your mind tries to tell. It doesn't matter. You're still going to behave these ways until you can say, okay, this is who I am. What should I be doing now? How can I go about trying to move energy? What would that look like? And I'm not answering that question right now. That's the problem with 4 weeks and not eight. You don't get any of the answers. Come back next year. Actually, you can go online. There's a lot of eight-week classes and other classes, Asha's classes. Swamiji gave a beautiful series. He did a whole inner renewal week on the chakras many years ago. So 5 full mornings of just talking about them. It's wonderful. And you can hear many more suggestions. I mean, we're talking about them. We're talking about whether it's the peace and harmony prayer or looking into somebody's eyes and see Divine Mother. These are all what it is. I mean, even in weeks before, I've said to you, don't even think about the problem. Just put the right color on. Literally, it can start changing you. But make sure that you're being honest and that you're being real with yourself and you're literally biting off just as much as you can chew. Otherwise, it hurts too much. And none of us like to do things that hurt. We don't. We'll stop. Okay? Comments, questions about anything that we've talked about so far? Okay, let's go eat it.